big podcast coming up this week on the Sports Desk with Ben and Austin. We'll be covering all the latest in the cricket world as the Test series between Australia and Pakistan gets going. We'll also be covering a bit of basketball and soccer, as well as doing a review of 2016 in Decision Desk. That and more coming up on the Sports Desk podcast right here on Sin.
The Sports Desk podcast.
Hello all and welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Desk podcast here on Sin. I'm your host Ben Pascuzzi, and alongside me for the final time in 2016 and the final time forever is Austin Van Groningen. Austin, how are you?
I am extremely well, thank you, Ben, although very sad. For those of you out there who don't know, I'm turning 26 on the 19th of December, and that means my eligibility at Sin ends. So this is my last ever show. I'm enjoying your company for the last ever time, Ben, although we could catch up afterwards if you really want. But for the sake of the Sports Desk, this is it. This is our last show for 2016 and my last time on air for Student Youth Network.
It is a very sad time, and unfortunately this is, of course, our final show for the year and Austin's last, so we'll be sure to make it a good one, and why not, we'll start off with the cricket. And Australia and Pakistan currently at the moment are playing the first test up at the Gabba, the first day-night test match at the Gabba, and Pakistan at the moment in the second innings in reply to the Aussies' total of 429 in the first innings and declaring a 202. They still currently trail by 289 runs at the moment, are 5 for 200. So Australia in a very commanding position there.
They are indeed, and we should give some credit to the Pakistanis for holding their own in this second innings. They had a dreadful day one of that day two of that test. They lost 8 for about 97 and had a fine 10th and 11th wicket partnership to claw it up to about all out for 142, I think it was. So to be 5 for 200 in the second innings, batting last, is actually pretty respectable. It's not a bad final score. The problem is they're so far behind, it's just very difficult to see them claw their way into a winning position in this match, Ben.
It's very unlikely that they're going to... Although they were looking good, I think they were around 2 for 140-odd or whatever, and then Australia just getting a couple of quick wickets. And that's the thing in day-night test cricket, especially even in cricket in general, but particularly in day-night test cricket, just momentum is key here. And especially under lights with that moving pink ball, the lights do play a bit on the wicket, play a bit of a factor. So it's going to be very unlikely for Pakistan, in my opinion, to see at the night, in fact. So if they do survive somehow to tomorrow, it'd be quite an extraordinary fight. But yeah, even so, if they do survive tonight and face tomorrow, it's a very, very unlikely task. But nonetheless, they've showed some fight in this second innings, which is what we wanted to see. So hopefully they can produce this on Boxing Day in a week's time.
Indeed. Well, Pakistan's coach, Mickey Arthur, who formerly coached Australia, had some words to say about the difficulties of day-night cricket and the tough twilight period that the batsmen face, which we'll return to pretty soon. But you're right. What we really want to see in this Pakistan visiting test team is a competitive opposition for us Aussies. We've had a poor year on the test front. We got wiped out by South Africa before we had a time to assemble a decent team. Now we've got a pretty strong lineup with some good youngsters, which we'll talk about. Hanscom and Renshaw really looking the goods. And we hope that Pakistan will deliver a strong display for that MCG test coming up in a week's time.
And just quickly before we go into Mickey Arthur's comments earlier in the week, the crowd, the attendance for the Gabba test so far has already eclipsed the record set in 2007 and 2008 against Sri Lanka for the highest test crowd without other than playing an Ashes test against England. So at the moment, after day three, 70,612 have attended the pink ball test against Pakistan, easily eclipsing the previous record of 55,947. So just again, 70,612 after only 3 days of play, already eclipsing that previous mark. It's just quite remarkable, and it's good to see that Brisbane are finally coming out to watch test matches other than the Ashes.
Indeed, and what an endorsement for day-night cricket. When you pull crowds like that, you know something's going right, and it may not yet be perfect. There's still questions around the pink ball, still questions around the fairness of the format with that twilight period and the number of wickets that can fall quickly, but it is drawing the crowds, and that's exactly what test cricket needs.
We should also mention that Peter Hanscom got his debut ton for the Australians, scoring his first century in his second innings, or was it his first innings.
Third innings overall. Yeah. That's right. He scored a 54. He scored about 20 not out in Adelaide in his two innings there. Right. And then coming in third innings, 105, I think it was.
Yep, 105.
So Hanscom has made a very bright start to his test career.
Unlike Nick Maddison, unfortunately, his three test innings have posted totals of none, one, and four.
Yeah.
Does he stay?
Well, it's a really interesting question. You'd think that if Sean Marsh were fit, he would come straight in. The lineup would have to change. You probably wouldn't put Sean Marsh in batting at five or six. Mm. So things might change around a little bit. In fact, we debated Renshaw versus Marsh a couple of weeks ago, and I controversially said Marsh over Renshaw. Renshaw's holding his own.
Mm-hmm.
But we're talking about Maddison. Talking about Nick Maddison, yeah, we should come back to Renshaw because I know you love him and great partnership with David Warner to open the batting. But Maddison, yeah, I want to say let's give him another go. And the reason is I think Marsh is probably not going to be fit in time. He's probably not going to be physically ready for Boxing Day. Give Maddison one more crack. Give him the test. See if he can put together a solid run with the bat. And if he doesn't, so be it. Probably won't cost us the match if he's the one who doesn't fire. But if he does, then that's exactly what we want to see.
So I totally agree with you there. But the only thing is, if we're giving Nick Maddison another shot, then why don't we give Callum Ferguson another shot?
Well, this is the new era of cricket, isn't it? We're sitting with a new selection panel on the Australian team, and they're clearly more willing to give the younger guys a go. Callum Ferguson, it might just be a case of bad timing for him and his career. He had a different set of selectors with different expectations around his performance and the team's performance. That's now changed, and that happens in sport. It's an unfortunate reality, I think, Ben.
Yes, it is unfortunate. So back with Renshaw, and he did produce quite a remarkable knock in the first inning, scoring 71 off his 125 balls faced, and that's a strike rate of just over 56. And from a bloke who only scored was 30-odd runs after facing around 130 deliveries in that second innings in the Adelaide Test, to do this, to have a strike rate over 50, I mean, this is pretty good. And to score 71 in his home state as well in the first innings of a Test match, it's quite remarkable, and it just goes to show that he is potentially the future of Australian cricket.
Well, he really outshone David Warner in the first innings.
Yeah.
And you know, he's proven in his very short career so far real flexibility, which is so valuable as an opener. To be able to score at more than one run for every two balls in this test, and then in the previous test to be able to stonewall. He had a strike rate in his 20s in that test. And you have to be able to do both as an opener. I mean, you have to be able to defend, take the shine off that new ball, and work your teammates into the game and score slowly as a result. And then, on a favourable batting pitch like they had up in Brisbane day one, you have to be able to go fairly quickly, which he did. And a strike rate of more than 50 for an opener is quite exceptional. It's something you see from David Warner and not from any other players. So well done, Matt Renshaw.
Yeah, very good job there to Matt Renshaw. And it's going to be such an exciting opening partnership to see in years to come. We'll move on now from that to a locker room mix-up. Now, Usman Khawaja, earlier in the week, he probably was wearing casual clothes or something, and he was asking one of the staff there at the Gabba up there in Brisbane to go to the locker room, and he obviously didn't say which country, and the lady actually led him to the Pakistan locker room. And obviously, of course, Usman Khawaja was born in Pakistan, but he's clearly an Australian test player, so that's quite the mix-up and a bit embarrassing there for that staff lady at the Gabba.
It was, but I did see Khawaja interviewed about that, and he seemed to see the funny side.
Yeah.
I don't think he was too upset or offended. Bit worrying that the Gabba staff don't recognise our star batsman, though. I mean, this is a guy coming off a test century in Adelaide.
And he's a Queenslander. Yeah.
They should be given team sheets before each match, clearly.
Unfortunately, we've got to wrap up there, the test cricket, but we'll move quickly now to the Big Bash League, which starts on Tuesday night with the Sydney Derby taking place, the Sydney Thunder taking on the Sixers at 7:40 p.m. at Spotless Stadium. The two Melbourne teams, so Austin, you are a Stars man, I'm correct?
I am indeed.
Yep, your boys, the Stars, they take on the Hobart Hurricanes on Boxing Day. at Blunston Arena, 7:10. And my boys, the Renegades, take on the Sydney Thunder this Thursday at Etihad Stadium.
Pretty clever fixturing by the Big Bash not to put the Stars up against their opponents in Melbourne during the Boxing Day test. I mean, they'd be denied the MCG anyway, but they've gone for a scheduling which doesn't put them in direct competition, sends them down to Hobart. Lots of cricket tragics down there who would love to see a game of T20, and so they're playing the Hurricanes. Nice bit of fixturing. The curious thing about the Big Bash is, in many ways, it competes with the tests, because Big Bash has the Channel 10 alignment and Test Cricket has the Channel 9 alignment. So there's a TV competition between the two. And Big Bash pulled some spectacular ratings figures last year. So they'll be hoping to do that again, and their fixturing echoes that need.
Okay, so that wraps up cricket for this week. Now we're going to move on to some basketball, and we'll start off in the NBA. And the major story is Russell Westbrook has just posted another triple-double for the season. He's 13th for the year, and he's 50th in his career.
Well, this is just amazing from Russell Westbrook. And we spoke a couple of weeks ago about how this would only get harder from here on in, yet he's still doing it. So opposition teams know he's capable of big numbers, know he's capable of knocking down the shots from the field and getting the rebounds and assisting his teammates. He can do all three, and yet he keeps on doing it, despite their efforts to shut him down. So, Ben, remarkable display from Mr. Westbrook over there.
Yeah, quite remarkable. And the match he did bring it up in was Oklahoma City Thunder's win against Phoenix, 114-101. Westbrook scored 26 points. He had 22 assists and recorded 11 rebounds. And that's just remarkable for a point guard.
So 22 assists.
Exactly.
That is huge.
And we're talking about Chris Paul, I believe it was last or 2 weeks ago. He scored 20 points and had 20 assists. The first player to ever have a 20-point and 20-assist a game. So Westbrook just bettering him there with the points and assists. So
it's just such a massive scoreboard contribution.
It's just remarkable.
Because if you're scoring 26 points and having 22 assists, your 22 assists become at least 44 points. You are then looking at contributing well over 60 points on the scoreboard, probably mid-70s, something like that. So that's just an enormous aid to his team. What a gun.
Now we'll move on to the Dallas Mavericks, because our Aussie man, Andrew Bogut, it's been touted that the Mavs may be looking to trade him. But it's hard to think that they'd want to trade him when you've got Bogut. Now, we're going to play just a quick bit of a video here, but Bogut, he's just a blind behind the camera, and who wouldn't want to have an Aussie in the team? So just take a listen to this little snippet.
Many people think I speak English, but they're wrong. I actually speak Australian. I wanted to see how well my teammates understand me.
Try this one. G'day, mate. How's it going?
G'day, mate. How's it going?
G'day, mate. How's it going?
Yeah, as you can tell there, the Dallas Mavericks do need to work on their Australian language. So I think it'd be a bit of a hindrance if the Mavs do trade Bogut, but in terms of that, in terms of learning how to speak Australian, but well, in terms of Bogut's development, I actually, it's been touted that he might move to the Boston Celtics, who do need a rebounding defender, or perhaps even the Atlanta Hawks. So, Andrew Bogut, if he were to move to Boston Celtics, how big of a move would that be?
Well, it'd be such an enormous move for us Aussies. I'm not sure in the NBA context, when you've got Kevin Durant switching around and LeBron James switching around.
It'll still
around,
be big news there, trust me.
It'll still be big. Okay, that's interesting to hear.
Yeah.
Well, look, he's not that young anymore. He's probably 30, 31. So he's not. It's not like he's an early career player. He's a known quantity, and he's known to be a very, very good player. So it'd be a great pickup for the Celtics. And I think any story that puts basketball in the news in Australia with big-time Australian players can only be a good thing. So this sort of thing is good for stimulating interest in the sport.
Yeah, Bogut is 32 at the moment, but
there you go.
Nonetheless, he'll still be an incredible asset to a team. I mean, the Mavs at the moment, they've had an absolutely horrific, horrendous season. At the moment, they are sitting 15th. That's dead last in the Western Conference with 6 wins and 20 losses. They are equal with the Philadelphia 76ers on the bottom of the total NBA table. So no doubt they'll be looking to rebuild, and Bogut will warrant a couple of draft picks, so that'll be interesting to tell. So we'll move on now to the overall standings of the NBA. So the Cavs still lead the Eastern Conference with 19 wins and 6 losses. Trailing them are the Raptors and the Celtics, who Bogut could potentially join. The Hornets sit in 4th position and the Milwaukee Bucks are in 5th. New York Knicks, Pacers and the Bulls round out that top 8 in the Eastern Conference. Moving on now to the Western Conference, and the Golden State Warriors still sit first place there with 24 wins and 4 losses. Trailing them are the Spurs, Rockets and Clippers, whilst rounding out the top 8 are the Grizzlies, Jazz, Thunder and Trailblazers. So interesting stuff there in the NBA, particularly the Eastern Conference, with Milwaukee Bucks really a team on the rise, looking eyeing down a top 4 spot there. And the Celtics again proving that they could be a second seed in the Eastern Conference. But again, time will tell whether or not they need some pieces to potentially do that. Good news for Ben Simmons. He was seen shooting his first free throws early in the week. So his recovery has been touted as potentially late January, early February. So that'll be good to see. But his team at the moment sit dead last in the Eastern Conference with 6 wins and 20 losses.
Well, hopefully he can come back and lift them off the bottom of the table, Ben.
Let's hope so. And we'll just quickly finish off basketball with the NBL. And the Adelaide 36ers have recorded 7 wins in a row this week, recording 2 wins over the Sydney Kings. And that sees them sit in first place on the table, with the Sydney Kings relegated now to second position. Melbourne United have been on the improve, but they still sit on the bottom of the table after a 10-point loss to the Bullets last night.
Yeah, it's just amazing how one win or one loss can change the ladder position. You can move up 2 or 3 places, you can tumble down. It's such a close NBL season. We've said that before, Ben.
It's so good, and this is what you want to see in any competition. And it's only around two wins really separating bottom from first. So 2 to 3 wins there. So it's just such a tight competition, and that is exactly what you want to see.
It is indeed. I was just looking after 15, 16 rounds. You've got the Adelaide 36ers up there with a 9-win, 6-loss record. Down the bottom, Melbourne United with a 7-win, 9-loss record. So as you say, 9 wins on top, 7 wins on the bottom. It's that tight.
It is amazing. And that's what makes the NBL very, very good. We'll move on now to some soccer. And the A-League season is quite heating up at the moment, because Melbourne Victory, they've been sneaking under the radar. They now sit in second position after recording a 2-1 controversial win over Melbourne City last night. Bessart Berisha, the major talking point out of that match, scored a very, very controversial goal. It wasn't ruled as offside on the ground, but replays clearly showed he was around, half a metre offside from his closest City opponent, scoring his 90th goal. The match winner in that match, of course, Victory winning 2-1. His 90th goal, which sees him equal Archie Thompson for the most goals ever in the A-League.
And you'd think he'd comfortably surpass Archie Thompson's record.
Oh, for sure.
With the form that he's in at the moment. Scoring a hat-trick last week up there against Western Sydney as the Victory downed them 3-0. And the Victory keep on rolling. 2-0 against City. A very good win at Amy Park there. Just interesting point on Berisha. I mean, that you mentioned that's a controversial goal. Kevin Muscat actually said after the match that Victory should have won with sort of a lead of 2 or 3 goals. They should have scored 3 or 4. So he believed that there are a couple more opportunities that his players missed out on. But they still got the win. Cahill with the sole goal for City. Still,
and he continues to produce in the big matches. And again, I'm going to ask you, you know where it came from. His head. It's always that. It's just remarkable. Cahill, it's just great consistency, and you can always rely on him when the big moment comes.
So if Berisha could score 90 A-League goals after about 130, 140 A-League games, how many could Timmy Cahill have with the same tally of games?
Oh, he wouldn't get the record, but he'd be around, 70, 80 goals perhaps? So
he's been very
around
good.
That mark.
He's had a very bright start. We hope that he can play several years in this competition.
Let's hope so. Sydney FC, they remain on top of the A-League standings. They recorded a 4-1 routing over Perth Glory, also on Saturday night that was. On Friday night, the Newcastle Jets scored a very late winner against Adelaide United. I was able to catch that match. They scored it in the 94th minute. Whistle going not short after, and that sees Adelaide United remain on the bottom of the table, the defending champions, believe it or not. So
season over, Ben.
Season over, you're calling
season
it?
Over.
Yeah, I tend to agree as well, and it's going to be hard for them. Well, they only sit 6 points away from sixth position, which is the final place in the final, so there's still a chance for finals, but it's going to be very hard for them to defend their championship. So Austin's called it over. I'm leaning towards that as well, but seeing their form last season, it's... you don't want to really write them off just yet. Just yet. I'm still clinging on a bit of hope.
Well,
we'll see. We'll see as
we
time
will
tells.
See.
Wellington Phoenix and Western Sydney played out a 2-2 draw. And the final match, which was played earlier today, Brisbane Roar defeating Central Coast Mariners 2-1. So quickly on the standings here, Sydney FC lead it with 27 points and trailing them are Victory behind by 7 points. City sitting in third and rounding out the top six are Brisbane Roar, Newcastle Jets and Perth Glory. That wraps up A-League and... we'll just quickly finish off soccer with a rumoured contract offer for Carlos Tevez, who is set to become the highest paid footballer in the world when he joins the Chinese Super League Revolution with an incredible $1 million Australian dollars a week deal, and that deal at Shanghai Shenhua.
$1 million a week.
Imagine that.
That, wow. That would get you an awful lot here. It'd get you even more in China. Like, honestly, the amount of money they're throwing at this competition to get it started and to build some popularity is just beggars belief.
Should we play soccer now? Well, you're already playing futsal.
Well, I was playing futsal until
until
I had an ignominious fall. I tumbled over trying to score a spectacular goal. Last gasp, 5-5, Ben. I took a tumble, tripped by the opposition goalkeeper, mind you, and fell on my wrist, broke it, so I'm not playing soccer.
And wasn't seen by the referee.
The ref missed it. It was a real howler.
We need to bring goal line review.
Well,
we have to bring it for soccer. All right,
moving
that's
on.
It for soccer. And now, for your final time, Austin, it is Decision Desk.
That it is, Ben. And we have a very special edition of Decision Desk today because this is our last show for the year. This is the last chance we get to talk about 2016, the year that's been. And so we thought we would recap the year that's been and the year of 2017 to come in Decision Desk. Now, if you haven't listened before, Decision Desk is where we fire rapid one-word answer questions at each other. Maybe it'll be one-sentence answer questions because there are a few that will take a little
we'll
more thought
see.
This time.
Yep.
But the goal is to quickly get through some controversial issues and get each other's thoughts on them. So, Ben... I'm going to start off, if you don't mind.
Okay.
Tell me, who is your sportsperson of the year for 2016?
A sportsperson of the year. Well, I think it's been such a long year, we've kind of forgotten that the Olympics actually happened early in the year, and I'm going to go with Usain Bolt. And it is him winning his 12th gold medal, winning 3 medals again, the third consecutive year he's done it, winning it in the 100-metre sprint, 200-metre sprint, and the 4x100-metre relay with Jamaica. And it's just unseen, unheard of before, and I don't think it can be matched ever again. It's just quite remarkable he's able to do that in those three major events. So it's just remarkable.
What you're basically saying there is he's the greatest short-distance track athlete of all time.
Oh,
he's the greatest sprinter ever.
Yes, unrivaled.
He is very... Look, it's hard to argue with that. It's really hard to rival Usain Bolt as pick for Athlete of the Year.
You, Austin, who's your pick?
I'm going with another Olympian, 4-time gold medalist at Rio, Simone Biles. Now, if you haven't seen Simone Biles on the gymnastics floor doing one of her routines, jump online and have a look. She is 142 centimetres tall. She's from the United States and is just... she does things that we didn't think were possible. There are moves that are named after her because she's the only person in the world who can do them. I'm talking about like crazy double backflip, somersault, pummel, horse, like ridiculous stuff. Now, I'm no gymnast, as you can tell. I can't appreciate the finer aesthetic elements of gymnastics. But Simone Biles has broken the mold of what a gymnast looks like. She has transformed the sport. And she's collected 4 gold medals at the age of 19 in one of the most physically grueling sports that we see. Truthfully, we only often see this sport around the time of the Olympics, but her year cannot be denied.
That is quite remarkable. Okay, Austin, your greatest moment for 2016?
Well, I have to say the doggies. Something to do with the doggies, right?
Yeah.
Now, grand final was a great day, but I think what I look back on, perhaps even more fondly, was the prelim win against GWS, because they were supposed to be the rising power. They were supposed to win that game. The doggies went up there and won. And I just think it was the best game of football I've ever watched. I thought that was awesome. We finally broke through to a grand final, and that was just a superb night to be a Bulldogs supporter.
Now, quick question. Which match do you hold more of, the elimination final win against West Coast or the grand final?
Ooh, which match do I hold on to more?
Yeah.
Well, the grand final. Of the elimination versus the grand final, I've got to say the grand final.
Because it's quite, even the elimination final, that was against all odds as well.
It was, and the elimination final showed Bulldogs supporters that it was possible. That showed,
even the semi as well.
Phenomenal performance that I genuinely thought, okay, we could actually do this. Yeah. If we play like that, three more weeks, we could actually do it.
And then you did the semi against Hawthorn as well, and beating the reigning champions for 3 years in a row as well. So all finals matches are going to hold a special place in your heart, in all Doggies supporters' hearts.
Each one of those four finals was one of the greatest Bulldogs victories I've seen. Each one would comfortably fit in the list of top 10 Bulldogs victories I've seen. And I think the prelim was the best of them. It was fantastic.
And my greatest moment for 2016 would have to be LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers finally getting a championship there for the city of Cleveland in the United States of America. It was great seeing them defeat the Golden State Warriors. I mean, the Golden State Warriors had a record-breaking season, 73 wins, 9 losses, never done before, beating the previous record by the Chicago Bulls, which was 72-10. So to defeat them in the finals and do it so convincingly, with Kyrie Irving, of course, getting that match winner, it was great to see. And it was good to see that it was, in fact, LeBron who was back in Cleveland delivering that championship.
Fast approaching greatest of all-time status. He's probably number two right now. All right. Ben, what's your worst sporting moment of 2016?
I'm going to go with a bit of car racing here, and I'm a big motorsport Formula One fan, and it'd have to be Tyregate, as we'll like to call it, when Daniel Ricciardo's team Red Bull were unable to find the correct tyres after calling, mind you. They called Daniel Ricciardo into the pit stops, and they did not have his tyres ready, and that enabled Lewis Hamilton to, when Ricciardo finally got out of the pits, well, that enabled Lewis Hamilton to overtake him and win the Monaco Grand Prix. And it's so hard to overtake there in Monte Carlo. So that'd have to be my worst moment.
Fair enough. And there's some tough competition here. There's the Pfaff Duplessis ball incident. Yeah. There's ball tampering. There's Maria Sharapova, the doping charge. I am going with Ryan Lochte. We've had some Olympics highlights. This was an Olympic lowlight. And the staged, faked armed robbery, it's just a bizarre story and one that I think we'd all rather forget.
Without a doubt. Now, Austin, unlikeliest moment of 2016?
The unlikeliest moment. I'm going to go for the Chicago Cubs and their breakthrough win. To have waited over 100 years for that, something that their fans could savour, and a very unlikely victory.
And I'm going to go with the other most obvious option, Leicester City. I mean, a team that just got promoted 2 years prior to their win, almost getting relegated the year before, and to win the Premier League, where it's been exclusive to potentially, I think it's been 6 clubs only in the past 20 years who have won the Premier League. To do that, it's just quite remarkable for a team that almost got relegated the season before, and this season are only in around 15-16 position, so they could still yet get relegated and be the first team to almost get relegated, win the Premier League the next year, then get relegated. Imagine if that happens.
Well, amazing mould-breaking win for Leicester City. I've got a question for you, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
What's the headline you most want to see in 2017, looking forward to next year?
In 2017, I'm going to stick with Formula One again, and I'm going to say Ricciardo wins the Formula One World Championship.
Ooh, Danny. Wait, how does he do it? Which races does he take out on his way there?
Which races? I reckon he'll take around 6 or 7, with the guarantees that he'll take out Monaco Grand Prix. He'll probably take out the Canadian Grand Prix, and I see him taking potentially... Oh, well, it's hard to pick the Grand Prix, but those are the two I see him winning, mostly.
Fair enough.
And
fair
you,
enough.
Austin?
My dream headline for 2017...
I like this
apart
one.
..from the doggies, Bad Boy becomes Golden Child. Nick Kyrgios wins Grand Slam.
I love it.
You love it, I love it. We both love Nick. We know that he's a bit of a rat bag. We know that he can talk some foul language now and then. But he's good for the sport. He inspires crowds to come and watch tennis. And we haven't had an Aussie men's Grand Slam winner for some 15 years. It's time for Nick, and I'd love to see him win one next year.
Which Grand Slam do you see him winning?
Ah, gee. I'd love to see him win the Oz Open. And I think that might be his best chance. Home court. He loves a crowd. So I'm going to go for the Aussie Open next month, Ben.
And I'm going to go with Wimbledon. I actually see that as his best chance. He's proved well to be a good performer on grass, so it'd be... How romantic would that be? Winning Wimbledon as a first.
And he had his big career breakthrough at Wimbledon against Rafael Nadal. So, could see it happening.
And what are you most looking forward to in 2017?
Well, again, there's so much. In fact, I think I've forgotten what I was going to say. But I will say the women's football, Ben. Women's footy starting up Feb next year, leading into AFL preseason, is just fantastic. Women now have an outlet for AFL at the highest level, and it's a great endorsement for our Australian game.
Yes, that is going to be great to see. And me, I'm finally looking forward to seeing Mundine retiring. And seeing this Mundine v Green fight. I mean, it's been talked about for so many years. I'm just looking forward to seeing it, watching it, and hopefully seeing Mundine retire. Because I'm just, he's had enough of the limelight, and he just seems to suck everything out. So, Mundine retiring and this fight between him and Danny Green.
He sucked Danny Green out of retirement because he was supposed to be there already.
Yeah.
He's been retired for years, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Boxing, I don't get it.
All right, we're just going to finish off on some big predictions for 2017. So we'll just go through the major leagues. So AFL, Austin.
Doggies to go back-to-back.
I actually agree with you there.
Yes!
NRL.
The Storm.
We're in agreement here. We're in sync.
No.
A-League.
City.
Oh, three in a row. Big bash.
I'm going on the Renegades.
You're kidding me. Yeah. Four in a row. Okay, NBL.
The Kings will do it.
Okay, because I don't want to make it five in a row. I'm going to go with someone else. I'm going to go say the Brisbane Bullets. Now, the NBA, do not make this six in a row.
Spurs.
Okay, he didn't make it six in a row. He knew I was going to say Cavaliers.
I knew.
You knew that would have been six in a row. Okay, so we are in sync. And on that note, we are going to end the Sports Desk podcast for 2016 and... This is Austin's final show. So, Austin, I'm giving you the reins to end this podcast.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Ben. And much like the Western Bulldogs, you have a very bright future, both here at Sin with the show and in your own personal life and career. Good luck with Year 12 next year, Ben. And to all the listeners who joined us, thank you so much. It means the world to us that you would listen in. We love hearing your feedback on Facebook and online. So please keep listening into the podcast. Keep supporting Sin. Community radio does a great service for young people in this country who want to skill themselves up and enter the workforce with some experience, with some knowledge, and with some practical hands-on work in the studio. So Sin provides that outlet. It's a great organisation, and I've loved being a part of it. Thank you, Ben. Thank you to everyone in Student Youth Network, and hopefully you'll hear from me in a different capacity sometime soon.
I'm sure we'll get you on next year. We'll get you on potentially as a special guest, expert on the Doggies performances. So thank you very much, Austin, from all of us here at Sin. And for you guys, the listeners, thank you very much for listening to us this year. And we've been talking here on the Sports Desk, nothing else but sport, the games which do unite the people of the world.